Hey, you're listening to WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the best embracement radio and the voice of Rollins College. This is DJ Chill helping out here at Punkonomics.
Yes, sorry.
So we have, you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Absolutely. Well, I'll introduce. This is Benny. I got to first say, you know, say hello to Jesse, who's probably listening for the first time. This will be a 41st show, and then Jesse Velez is not with us. My co-host, I feel a little naked, you know, almost without him here. Well, he's sick, and hopefully he'll be back. But we have DJ Chill here to help me out, so we should be fine. And we also have fascinating guests. As usual, I have posted information on the punkonomics.org blog and all over the place for anybody who's more interested in more details, and I'll probably post more after the show, and of course there will be a podcast, etc., etc., etc. So our guests today are from the 1199 Service Employees International Union, United Healthcare Workers East, Florida. It's not a chapter, right? What is it?
That is our local.
Local, right.
Yes.
I should know this stuff. And with us we have Coy Jones and Vera Nelson. And I will ask them a few questions. Well, I want to first a little bit introduce just a few words, but then as we usually go, you know, we'll just go with it. See, I have some interesting questions for me, you know, and we'll see where we go there. So first of all, I want to point out, in case you know, they have a kind of long, maybe could argue, you know, clumsy name, the short version, right? The 1199 is what they're famous for. And it's really a legendary union, if you will, right? I mean, major history, not so much in Florida. Florida has 10 years history, though.
Yeah.
We'll talk about just how brave and important that is. But amazing history. Like I just said, only 10 years now in Florida, which is very hostile terrain, to say the least. And they're famous for a lot of action in the civil rights movement, famously Martin Luther King called them his favorite union.
Yep.
They have history that involves both confrontation with bosses and owners, as well as cooperation with bosses and owners, and I'm sure we'll hear more about that. And let me start with first of all, maybe just give us whatever you feel like a general. What do you want to tell us about the 1199 nationally as well as in Florida, before I go into anything more specific?
Great, thank you. First, let me say thank you, Benny, for having us. This is our pleasure to actually be here. 1199 is a healthcare union that has been heavily involved in social injustice fights. We are currently in 5 different states, Florida being one of them. We are new, fresh here in the state. We just merged with 1199, I'd say, in the past 5 years. We were another local. We were called another name before we became 1199. Mm-hmm. I just came on to the union, so I'm fairly new to the history and being privy to learning the background and, you know, just the rich cultural heritage that 1199 has really like implemented itself here in the nation. And now I'm just glad that we're here locally in the state. Vera, do you have anything else you want to add?
I'm one of the healthcare workers. And the union is very, very beneficial. A lot of people are against it, but you know, it's a positive thing. It's nothing negative can come from it. Only negative thing can come from is negative people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all about uniting together, fighting together, standing together. And in this world, you have to stand united. You have to stand strong. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Yep.
And my thing on that is the benefits and things that we fight for in our contracts, I fight for them because even we need to get them in place. Even if I'm not there to receive them, the up and coming members that are there will benefit from them, and it can only get better. We're trying to progress, not regress.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about maturing and growing. So therefore, I see no bad thing in the union, you know. Mm-hmm. And 1199 SEIU has been very, very positive for me. It's brought me a long way. I've learned a lot of things that I did not know. I've seen a lot of things that I never would have seen had I not gotten active. And it's all about being active, being a participant, and having a voice. Using your voice to say what you need to say in a very, very constructive way, not in a negative way, but in a positive way, you know, you can be heard.
That's hard sometimes, I'll admit. I'm a kind of a negative guy, you know.
But, you know, it's okay to be negative.
Though I understand.
It's okay to be negative. But, you
know,
have
to feed off of it.
And it teaches you how to be strong, you know, how to stand up for yourself, basically. Mm. You know what I'm saying? You have to stand up for yourself. And it teaches you how that you're not alone in this fight.
That's critical, right?
Yes.
It's a big theme actually on the show and on different topics we talk about. I mean, yeah, it's economics broadly defined, right? And
it is.
I'm the economics professor in the room, which usually means the party's over, right? Everybody leaves. I try, but we talk a lot about how people perceive the good and the bad as individuals. You know,
right.
They think that you know, this guy is the devil. If we get rid of him, everything's fine. No. Somebody will replace them if the system's rotten.
Exactly.
And the same things goes positive too, where this guy will save us. Well, no, if he's within a rotten system. So this is all, I've always found it interesting. And I'm no expert in unions. Some of my colleagues actually are experts. So I'm like, you know, I know something about it from history because it's so important. So it's the role of unions often is considered to be anti-business. Well, in fact, in many ways, it creates the balance necessary for things to function. Much of what's going on in the world today is that we're out of balance. And of course, some unions messed up, and there's always arguments within the union movements about how to do things, like every institution, that's perfectly normal too. Should I jump on?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump into the question.
So again, you can, of course, hijack anytime, take it any way you want, off topic, side topic, anything at all. But let's start with the nitty-gritty a little bit. And before I forget, who gave me your contact information was Brooke Hines.
Yes.
So, you know, I just wanted to say that.
Shout out to Brooke Hines.
If you're listening,
Main Street Alliance.
Mm-hmm. And so what actions are you taking right now, locally and possibly, I mean, I know your focus is local and that's kind of how it works, but also feel free to talk about the national level. What you doing?
So, Benny, so glad you asked that question. Vera and I, along with the other 26,000 members in this state, have been fighting for Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And we've been fighting for it now since the beginning of session. As you know, session was very heated on a plethora of levels, but Medicaid expansion, I will say, after speaking to not only the community, our members and legislators themselves, was the heated discussion, was the heated debate topic of discussion during this session. What happened was very early we had we formed a group along with Florida Chain, Planned Parenthood, PICO Florida, of course 1199 SEIU, SEIU as a whole, different unions. It was over 50 plus organizations that signed on to this fight, right?
So like Vera was saying, again, you know, you're covering each other.
Yes. I mean,
are joining in on a fight that might not be their immediate issue.
Absolutely. So very early on, the governor came out in support of it. We knew that we were going to have some opposition in the House. But we were very pleased to see that Senate leadership on both sides of the aisle really stepped up and lifted up a bill which was very similar to what we presented. They called it Healthy Families First. I want to say Healthy Families. It was Senator Joe Negron produced the bill, brought it to the Senate. The Senate passed it. I want to say everyone voted for it except for one person.
There's always one.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, it went to the House and it failed. So it never met the governor's desk. So since then, we have made it our business to make sure that we keep this fight alive, and not only in the media's ears, but in the public. Because as you know, coming in October, we have the enrollment process, which is going to be very crazy, and folks need to be very strategic on how we get people enrolled into the ACA. Because coming January 1st, two things happen. Mm-hmm. If folks do not get enrolled in some type of healthcare insurance, they will have to pay a fine. Yeah. We do know that. And then what also happens, because if we do not expand Medicaid, we will lose $1 billion starting January 1st of federal funds that would be coming to our state, which will now go to another state if we do not expand Medicaid.
Yeah. And I really admit that to not be a specialist on the topic, I look more know a lot, little bit more about the big picture, but how does it fit? I mean, the expansion of Medicare is... because I'm thinking that the original argument, I'll admit that I was very disappointed with what ended up with Affordable Care, as many people. It was, you know, once again dictated by industry primarily. Mm. Yeah, a little bit better. Give credit where credit is due, but disappointing. But one of the arguments at the time were to show how, you know, why not copy a relatively decent functioning model proven around the world? Mm. The closest we have to civilized healthcare is kind of the Medicare problem. Program. How does it fit into the new implementation of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare?
So just to respond to what you just said, we did, I think our president did model our program after Mitt Romney's program in Massachusetts. So, I mean, he...
Enough said. Yeah.
To me, he took a bipartisan approach, which he always said that he would do. So just to go back to what you were saying...
Well, he said the universal health care in 2008.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we can all admit at this in this room right now that Affordable Health Care Act passed, right? Yeah. It is the law.
Yeah.
And the only thing that we're fighting right now is how to do we make sure that our less fortunate are able to get the access that they need, right?
Because that's really where it's. I mean, there are going to be a significant amount of people that are uninsured that will be insured.
Yep.
Not as good as insurance that I've hoped to get, but it's better than nothing. No
For
doubt.
Sure.
No
yeah.
doubt. No
so doubt. We know that the Affordable Health Care Act is three pieces, right? It's Medicaid, which is a huge part of it.
Right.
And then we have the exchanges and the marketplace, right? So the piece that we're fighting for, the piece that's in jeopardy of being, that we're having trouble getting implemented and implemented in a correct way, is the Medicaid piece. Mm. What we were looking for is right now, under the Affordable Health Care Act, you can get affordable health care through Medicaid if you are at 100% poverty level.
Mm.
What we wanted to do here in this state was, and many other states across the country, is to raise the poverty level to 138%. Mm. So what that did was, is it would cover many more people. It would cover many of our workers who are working as dietary or as CNA, who are only bringing home $8-$9 an hour and are paying $2,000 deductibles or $2,000 copays. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the majority of poor in America are working poor,
and they're working. Course, these aren't couch potatoes.
Right. We're not the ones that are just sitting home saying, "Oh, we're going to piggyback off of everybody else, and if we get sick, you pay our bill." No, we're working people.
No, and even
we're working people that take care of other people.
Right.
And to have to fight to get affordable insurance should not be, especially when we work hard every day. We take care of the ones that can't take care of themselves. We're out there, we're fighting for their benefits too, which are being cut.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you know, how can you get effective health care when you're limited to funds? So that means your medications are limited.
Yep.
That means the health care itself is limited. Because I can tell you about personal experiences when I went to the doctor myself. From the time that I've had insurance and the time that I had to let the insurance go because of the deductible being too high, not being able to afford it, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. The way that they treat you when you go to that hospital and you do not have insurance is sickening. It's enough to make you literally sick, because they will not treat you as if you were a paying customer.
It is, but we're sick people in America. I mean,
exactly.
We're really sick. We're dying younger.
Yeah, exactly.
Infant mortality of a poor world country.
And the thing of that is, you know, with that, it's like they don't understand. If we came to you, we came to you because we need that help. And for you to deny us what we really need and to only question us and treat the symptoms that we tell you we have, any symptom can present itself as being something else. Only thing you're doing is treating them what they said that is wrong with them. That's not right. You need to get to the bottom of the core and find out what's really going on with this person. It could be something more serious. And they might not get a second chance to make it to the emergency room because of the treatment they got the first time. And a lot of people don't go because of the fact that I can't afford it. This bill is going to come in the mail. How am I going to pay it once it comes in the mail? That is not the way we should treat people.
Right. And it's
we are people ourselves, you know. And it's the sad part of it is those that can't afford the insurance, how dare you look down on someone else that can't? It's not that they don't want to, but it's out of their reach. And the thing that we're trying to do is get 1.2 million Floridians that are here in the state of Florida that don't have insurance, that cannot afford their insurance. We're trying to get them all insured in some type of insurance, some type of benefit to let you know, okay, they're trying.
I mean, even to put a number in it, I believe currently the poverty rate, just again, like you were saying, to illustrate what you were talking about, there's a... And all this rhetoric about, you know, poor being lazy. I mean, it's old as time, by the way. You know, it's old as time, that rhetoric. And so it's just shocking that it's still so alive and popular today. But I believe about $28,000 pre-tax for a family of four.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not exactly a luxury.
You're basically not making any money. So
you can, barely eat, let alone pay anything.
Exactly.
You know? And not even eat healthy food, which makes you sicker.
Exactly. Yeah,
and somebody's getting paid, by the way. This is all very profitable.
You either pay your rent and don't pay your light bill.
It becomes a luxury.
it's not to the point where, okay, I have enough to pay my light bill, my rent, and go to the hospital.
And it's through and through. I mean, you know, obviously, as usual, the poor, you know, defined by these numbers or others, suffer the most. But I just got to say that even if you're fortunate like I am to have a relatively excellent health insurance, you know, it's still ridiculously low quality, high cost. Yep. I mean, American healthcare is typically twice as expensive as any other country that is way better, which all industrial countries are in terms of the quality of care. Often Americans don't realize what shoddy healthcare we have, even if we're fortunate enough to have insurance.
But there's a fix. There's a fix to this, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a fix.
Yes.
We have a president, along with some other smart legislators, that got together and said, yes, we're going to pass the ACA, we're going to pass affordable healthcare, right? All we need to do is make sure that we implement it. If you look at states like California, who expanded Medicaid, already implementing ACA, success. We should be modeling states that actually have taken on this charge and actually have implemented the Affordable Health Care Act the way that it should be implemented. And then just to piggyback off of the high cost, the goal was and is the more people that buy into these health into this program, into buying health care insurance, the premiums will go down. We won't know this until we as Americans start to begin to implement ACA through the coming year, right? And then we could actually take a hard look at it and see, is this really working? Are our premiums going down? Are people that didn't have health care insurance in the past, are they getting the health care that they need? Are they getting the basic care that they need? And then just to also piggyback, I wanted to go back to what Vera had said about the Medicaid piece, is also that people who are on Medicaid are less likely to get sick, right? Because they have the access that they need. It's the folks that aren't getting the access that they need that are being sick. And then being workers, going to work, possibly affecting other folks. I mean, this is...
There's studies on this. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you shouldn't be forced to go to work when you're sick. It's counterproductive for the company. Not even talking about doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I'll be honest. You know, I often criticize Obama from the left, you know. But this is not the place for it now. But what you're talking about, the expansion of Medicaid, is the least problematic.
I
have problems with the fact that he was a little bit too nice to health insurance industry, giving them captive audience, a little bit too compromising. You know, I'm not in his shoes, right? But but this part of it is a no-brainer for real.
You just said it. You said that's exactly the talking point right there. This is a no-brainer. I mean, like this isn't our money. I mean, this isn't money that's coming from our state. This is federal money that's coming into our state that is for healthcare. I mean, like I think, and I will say, let me go back just to tell you what we are doing in this fight is that we are making calls to the governor. We are making calls to our targeted legislators. We are reaching out to them, having lobby visits, having sit downs, having town halls across the state. So we are trying to engage the legislators, especially the Republican, the conservative legislators that did not lift up the plan or the bill during session. I will say that there's been progress made, and there hasn't been any. I will say that, you know, we here in our region have sat down with, we have two targeted legislators. We have met with one, and the other has refused to sit down with us, and these are his constituents that are calling him. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's supposed constituents.
Well, no, these are people that live exactly. The people that live in his, exactly, that too. The people that live in his district are calling him and asking him for a sit down, and we're not getting it. So the goal is, of course, is to continue that added pressure, and then calling for a special session, because we want to see this get passed before we start losing funds, which is by January 1st.
Yeah, definitely use those federal dollars before they're given to the bank, before they give it to
or
the
they're
bankers.
Given to another state that's smart enough to expand Medicaid.
Yeah. Are there, I mean, I'm not trying to be an agitator or anything, but are there actions do you foresee that like strikes and things like that? Again, I know it's difficult in Florida.
Because
sometimes you have to resort to, if they don't listen to you, what do you do to make them listen?
Because
understand, right? I mean, I'm just what you were saying, I want to spell it out, right? You have the sick political system is something we talk about all the time too, right? And you're supposed to represent the people in your district, not the people who maybe not even in your district who are paying for your campaign. And we know that through and through, government suffers from this cancer.
Absolutely. So we know as a union, right? As members, as 26,000 strong, right? Mm. We know that these folks have to get reelected again. Mm. 1189 is very politically active across the state, and that is, I think that's why we're targeting certain legislators, because we know that they're vulnerable, and we also know that if you have constituents, and you have a lot of constituents that are 1189 that live in your district, and you're not listening to them, it is highly unlikely that you would get the support of those 26,000, right, coming in the next election. So numbers definitely speak volumes, like you said. Money speaks volumes. We know that we lift both sides of the aisle up. We have Republican friends, we have Democratic friends that we lift up and we support and we help get elected, whether it be boots on the ground or financially. So we are paying close attention to the legislators that have said no. I don't know if you've seen some of the ads that we've run statewide on some of our legislators, especially out in the Tampa area. I mean, we are targeting certain legislators that are not having good sense and not having a brain to take those federal funds, and we're targeting them. We want to know why, and our hope is to maybe have some conversation and a sit down to where we can actively hash this out and make sense of it and get something passed, because every day that we wait, we lose money, and every day that we wait, somebody gets sick and doesn't have healthcare insurance, and that's just not right.
Yeah, and the suffering is, again, we on the show, we talk about that. The suffering is huge. I mean, there's all this, again, the main corporate media is talking about the Dow Jones going up and things are great, but that impacts less than the top 10% of income owners in America. So we don't, nobody else cares. You know, following on this, so you know how you're describing that you're willing to fight, but you're trying to talk. And also that you mentioned that you do deal with both sides. I mean, obviously, historically and everything, I mean, you're more affiliated with the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Important also in the election of President Obama, very important. At least I know in 2008, I don't know if it was that important, but probably continued to be important.
It was very important. Right? Listen, I don't want to boast, but Vera, we would not have won the state of Florida if it wasn't for the efforts.
And I got to, I mean, you don't have to respond to this, but I can. I'm going to say that, you know, that all the, I'm thinking all the hundreds and thousands of votes that were stolen, yet you still won, you know?
Yeah,
it's something
course.
That I like to mention to people that, again, don't think
appreciate
about it.
That,
it's very, very nasty. So whatever I may criticize the president, you know, he had to not only win, he had to win in a landslide.
Exactly.
To make it. But the issue of unions being kind of a major part of the history of capitalism. It's not, you know, in socialism, you don't need unions. In fact, they didn't have much, you know, and in fact, they screwed it up in so many ways that's another issue.
Another hour.
The failure of most socialist countries in history. Yeah. Complete and utter failure of their own, you know, betrayal of their own workers and poor, etc.
Right.
But on the contrary, to use the phrase, you know, what made America great, you know, in many ways, people forget that not only the bosses, you know, who took the kids out of the mines, you know, who went
right.
from plantations to high tech, you know, who forced the owners to go there, and that long struggle of labor unions and organization of different kinds and populists in America and etc. So, but these days, unions are, you know, really kind of reviled, and shockingly, not just by owners of companies that, okay, I see where they're coming from, right? Yeah. They have their own interests here, no doubt, but also from people who would, you know, from workers. Hmm. Right, you hear so many people, oh, I don't need a union. So how do you kind of, on the practical level, as you're going to talk both to politicians, organized workers, how do you broach that, you know?
So, so being in a right-to-work state here in Florida, you hear that a lot.
Funny expression. Well, not really funny, kind of sad.
It's an oxymoron,
yes,
honestly.
It totally is.
But being here in a state where they do not value the worker, that's the problem that we face. And because they don't value the worker, and then being in the South and not, like, I grew up in the North, let me say that. I grew up in New Jersey, where joining a union is mandatory. You get a job, you join a union. That's the way it works in the Northeast. And nobody complains about it. You know what I'm saying? Because we're used to it. That's how workers are used to living and working and engaging. When you lose your job, you go to the union hall in the Northeast. You know what I'm saying? You go look on a union, you go to the union hall, you get suggestions of where you can go pick up work. Like, that's how it works, right? Here, folks aren't used to that. So it's like, it's almost like the Wild Wild West. It's like building that infrastructure, that ideology here in the South is hard. It's going to take a lot of work. We already have it naturally in some places in the country, like in the Northeast, in the North, and maybe even in the West Coast. It's the South that's, you know, antiquated in its thinking. And because of that, we have, and I don't mean that to be offensive. I'm not saying that to be offensive, not at all. It's antiquated in the sense that we are not used to unions and what they mean to us as workers. They don't get the value of it yet. You know what I'm saying? Because it's new, it's fresh here. I think that's why, you know, 1189 SEIU as a union works so hard to build membership and do education out in the community, not just with our members, but with community folk, to let them know about the union and let them know that there is value in this union, because it builds power and it shows power. And if you're upset and frustrated at the way that things are going and moving, not only in your white work sites, right, but in your community, this is how you build a movement.
You're helping people,
exactly.
Not just your members, just
exactly.
people in general.
Exactly. I don't know. Do you want to add on to that?
That's a long history there too. I mean, for making change, right? Like, just helping the community.
Right. Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. Which would probably bring you into.
Well, I'm also thinking, you know, when I was talking about that good old days, I mean, in many ways, they were very bad old days, but there was progress out of hell to somewhat less hell in the late 19th century. I mean, all these early labor movements in America, where America led the world, by the way, in labor movements at the time, in many ways. But it was also one of the stories that they tell in history about it is that it was spurred by all these immigrants. You know, back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now then it was Russians and a lot of Russian
Absolutely.
Jews
yep.
and people
yep.
who were kind of in a, like you say, again, in a culture where this kind of labor activism was known more.
Right.
And they really got a boost. I mean, this can be, it's funny because obviously at the time, I mean, people were saying like, that was like foreign agitators, you know? And here today we hear the same kind of thing. Exactly. So it's kind of a funny, bring them on, you know, we need them. But there is some talk today about a lot of Latino immigrants that also come from much more societies that are more used to this sort of action and dealing with poverty.
Yeah.
And they could, and are also a big contribution.
Yes.
Oh, Jesse. Oh, well, let's go. Hey, Jesse.
Hello.
I don't need that.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey. That's Jesse, our co-host, the other half of Funkonomics, sick at home.
All right. Hey, Jesse.
Yeah, I won't take too much time because I can barely talk, but I just want to say I'd like to thank the guests for taking the time to address some of those issues with the unions and healthcare. And I also want to say that Obamacare worked for me today. I happened to have pneumonia and was able to get care. I'm currently unemployed, so if that didn't exist, I'd probably be waiting forever and maybe not get the proper care. So I just want to toss that in the mix, even though I know it's not perfect, but it did work. So
nice. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Victory. Yeah.
Anyway, I got to go back to bed. Thanks for the show. It's very, very good.
No, thank you, Jesse.
Drink a lot of water and chicken soup and stuff, man.
Take care, folks.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Yeah, so yeah, I know. You know, I think it's important. Even the president himself said, you know, you make me, right? At some point. And so he needs the push. He needs the push. And I think people are doing it, and they should. And it's often because of the one-sidedness of most of our media in some ways. Sometimes you feel that when you do criticize, you find yourself in a very, very uncomfortable neighborhood all of a sudden with people you don't want to be standing next to. So that's always a little odd, but it has to be done. Okay, so yeah, I'm not, you know, before we, just so I don't get all carried away in different things, and I often do. So what else? I mean, you know, talk more about the different kind of things that you do, because again, you know, I think that it's relatively unknown by
Absolutely.
Most people.
I think we should talk about. So another major fight coming up this summer and into the fall is our contract fight. We have over 62 contracts that we are renegotiating right now.
In negotiations right
please,
now.
Please, yeah.
And basically, you know, we ask for simple things, nothing hard. All we ask for is safe staffing.
Mm-hmm. Explain
which is
safe
staffing is basically 2.9. Basically what that means is instead of having one CNA having 16 to 20 residents that she has to see and take care of in one 8-hour shift.
Wait, you said
CNAs,
certified nursing assistants.
Okay.
Okay. Instead of having those ladies handling 20 people at one time trying to give care, adequate care to them, which means combing the hair, brushing the teeth, feeding them, getting them dressed, showering them, whatever they need at that time, having to do 20 people in an 8-hour day, and some of them can be combative. Some of them, you know, it takes two people to do, but they need their time with that one person. And having to divide their time between 20 people, it cuts their time, it cuts their care. It's put a strain on the workers, because now you got to work twice as hard, twice as fast to try to get your job done. And you're not given the adequate care. And then, you know, to some of those residents, we're the only people that they see. So we become their family. And to have to cut their time that they're used to with us, it might be just to sit and hold their hand for an extra 5 minutes, just to brush their hair 2 or 3 strokes longer. That means a lot to them. And to have that taken away, you know, it's not fair to them and it's not fair to us. Because we care about our residents. We really care about the people that we deal with. And to have to deal with getting 10 people up to make sure they're dressed for the next day, it's not fair to them. Because now we have to cut the time that we have with them is cut in half.
Right.
And then you're at risk of somebody falling because you know you don't have enough people on the floor to make sure everybody's secure in their areas. You have the risk of a worker injuring their back because they're trying to lift a person by themselves. You know, different types mm-hmm. of stuff. You know, and I understand management. With management, is always numbers, numbers, numbers. Okay. Sometimes you have to forget about numbers. It's about care and the quality of care. Sometimes you have to remember they're human like you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to remember that might be your grandmother that is being neglected on her part of care. Totally. You know, and it's not fair to them. It's not about me at that time. It's about the people that I'm taking care of. It's about the people that I come in contact with. It's about them being treated as human.
Absolutely. I mean, you're speaking to such an important, and it's a feminist issue, by the way, too, because mm-hmm. it's at least, by the most conservative estimate, at least a third of rich world economies mm-hmm. are involving the care industry.
Yep. Right. Yep. Right.
And it's overwhelmingly unpaid
yes,
or underpaid.
Exactly.
And that has, and again, I'm like, it's funny. Now I'm getting like, now I'm going to be like all this like conservative capitalist here all the time, you know, which sometimes I wear that hat, you know.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with that hat. You're saying that it's not about numbers. And I say, you know what? The numbers are with you.
No, the numbers are not in our favor.
Depending on what? Yeah. Within a city. Well, yeah, I mean, but they don't need to be in a really proper, even market system. I mean, this has value.
Right.
You know, you have all these people screaming about family values, yep. but right. then when yep. the old people are old, right. we chuck them to the trash,
exactly.
right? So
exactly.
where are the values? That's worth money.
Yep.
You know, a good market system would take care of that. And there are even some good, like, conservatives out there, you know, they're a minority people, what can I say? But some of them, most of them are my friends, all 12 of them. No, but they recognize this stuff, that's not about, they can be all market, we don't want socialism and everything, that's great, but where is that value that you're generating here? I say that the reason why, we can't afford it, it's just like on the national level where we cut food stamps, but we give up to what, between $6 to $12 trillion to a few thousand people at yep. the top of our financial hierarchy.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, doctors are rich all over the world.
True.
But they're not uber rich, you know? So even American doctor, I remember in the arguments about healthcare, a lot of American doctors were saying, like, a majority of American doctors, I believe it was 69%, were willing to take a cut.
Exactly. Yeah,
to have a good functioning, they also don't want this kind of insanity.
Exactly.
So, yeah, they won't make $1 million a year, they'll just make $750,000 a year, mm-hmm. and they're fine with
they're
that.
Okay
you
with
know?
That, yeah.
So I'm just saying that it's a bad calculation. If you go like old school free market, not what they call it, not what they've done to it today.
Right.
But back in the days when capitalism was actually making the world a better place, which is like 200 years ago, up to 100 years, I don't know, you know, I'm making a little bit of a joke. Then no, that would make sense. People will be healthier, happier, families will be stronger,
yep.
kids will be healthier, workers will be more productive.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of times it was the money actually drove people that weren't at all particularly big humanists, bleeding heart liberals, to enact public education, public health. Mm-hmm. It was good for business.
Yep.
I would
yep.
like to point out Henry Ford. The man yep. was a Nazi, for
yes.
Christ's sake.
Yep.
I'm not calling him names.
No,
he was a Nazi.
I agree.
Right?
I hear what you're saying, yeah.
But he thought that having better workers, happier workers, not too happy, but would
but
make him more money.
Mm-hmm. And it would.
So that, yeah, and overall it does, yep. in fact. And we have countries that are weathering the current economic storms better, or countries
yep.
that are more like that, you know, some of the Scandinavian countries and Europe. Actually, a lot of people think, a lot of liberals actually make the mistake to think that they somehow are all these, you know, very humanistic, nice left-wing, but they're not anymore.
No, but you guys get the nice little two-hour break during the middle of the
less
day.
Less and less. That's being cut. That is being cut.
And the nice yeah. little holidays, yeah. your holidays, you know, like...
Yeah, they have a little bit of an advantage
yeah.
still, but they're losing it fast because they're under the boot of the same people.
Right,
you
right,
know?
Right.
Under the boots of the same
sure.
people. Whatever
sure.
the politicians are, who owns them is the question, isn't it?
Right. So, Benny, I don't want to lose sight of this.
No, please.
I just want to make sure that we let your public know that
yeah.
we are in the middle of a contract fight.
Yes.
And we are looking to our Democratic champions to help lift us up in this fight
mm-hmm.
because we do face potential picketing, potential striking, potential actions on our bosses if it does go that route. But we are in the talking phases right now, and I think the talking phases are going to go throughout the summer, right?
It's possible. It is possible, but we're not trying to prolong. It should not take
right.
as long as they want it to take
mm-hmm.
to get a decent contract. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not asking for millions of dollars. You know, all we ask you to do is be fair. Mm-hmm. Because without us, there is no you. We're the ones that make the money for you. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that take care of your residents that come in. We're the ones that make sure your facilities are straight, your facilities are clean. When state comes in to do their inspection, we make sure we're on top of our game. We make sure everything, all our I's are dotted and all our T's are crossed. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we're not asking you to do something that is not impossible. Right. All we ask you to do is
be fair.
It's a pie. You got your you have your pie. All we want is a slice, you know? Mm-hmm. We're not asking for the whole thing. We're not even asking for whipped topping on the top of it. We're just asking for our little share.
Right.
Period. What we've already earned. What we work hard for. You know, we're not asking you to give us a handout. Mm-hmm. Everything that we get, everything that we ask for, we earn.
And that's right. We were saying 26 contracts. So I'm assuming it goes the panoply from
62 contracts. Oh, yes.
So you were kind of describing maybe what sounds like more like long-term care and things like that. But it's also for other types of institutions?
Yes,
like hospitals, emergencies.
Yes.
All through. I mean, the people who take care of you when you're...
Our hospital, our health system that we represent, they're going to be doing their contract fight in the coming year.
Right.
So right now we're dealing with our long-term care facilities, our nursing home facilities, and then in the coming year we'll be working on our hospitals. So it's just a busy next couple of years for us, for sure. So that's just another piece of what we do. So, you know, we're champions on Medicaid expansion. We're champions on workers' rights. Mm-hmm. And I know you wanted to get into some other discussion.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're good. Yeah. We're good. I mean, first of all, you know, what are the things, you know, and broadly... you know, whether it be more like in a traditional workers' rights, specific contracts, negotiations, things like that, or social causes. Yes. I mean, anything, you know,
right.
what you're doing out there.
Right. So
keep going until
right. So social causes. One of the causes that our union got was heavily engaged in and heavily involved in was the Trayvon Martin case. Mm. We were on the ground very early.
Yeah, last I saw you were like,
last
a little
year.
Bit of homework. I saw you were like,
we worked hand in hand with the NAACP, and we actually have a sister that's out there in Sanford. Shout out to Shante Hall, who was heavily responsible for a lot of mobilization when you saw those news broadcasts about all the thousands of people that were out in Sanford. We were there on the ground. So like that's some of the things that we do. And since this verdict has happened. Them. Mm-hmm. I will say that there has been an awakening across our nation, not only just in our state but across our nation. Like literally, I was on calls yesterday. From the minute the verdict came in, I was on calls that night, all day yesterday, and plan to be on more calls today. Yeah. It's probably as soon as I leave you.
Even my phone exploded.
Yeah. So let me just say that we as a union, SEIU, has put out statements. We are supporting the course of the NAACP. There's a petition that's been going around. It actually crashed their website yesterday. Over like 30 million people signed this petition. It's crazy. Exactly. So I know that our union, all locals, are moving the petition, and I know that we will be working with other organizations like the Dream Defenders in the weeks, the days, and weeks to come on how do we call attention to this issue? How do we highlight just the amount of civil rights and how we are disproportionately given them.
Yeah, it's on the vacuum too when you consider all the other Supreme Court activities.
Yeah, for sure. And then I will say that I think the major talking point coming out of a lot of the calls that I was on nationally and statewide was that there's a differential of life. There's a differential of life between black and brown men. And there's this feeling that their lives are not valued here. And a sense that they're not safe. You know,
it's not a feeling.
This is a time, like, and I'm going to let her speak to this too, is like as a mother, I am an African-American single mom who is raising a 14-year-old brown male.
Yeah.
And my son by no means is, disrespectful. He is no means a troublemaker. And when my son walks the streets, I tell him to always be careful. Now my conversation with him is I can't say don't run now. Yeah. I can't even say go talk to the police.
You probably want to lock him at home, right? But you can't do
that
either.
You
right?
want to say that as a parent, and especially as a parent of a black and brown child, you want to protect your kids, but we live in an environment now that it's just not safe for them. And, my son is currently in New Jersey visiting my parents for summer vacation and getting that, you know, history, that side of his family. And then, me having to call him, have this conversation with him. And then my mom is like, no, I don't want him to come back home. I want him to stay here with us. Like, literally, people are scared to let their children out now. And it's unfortunate. And I want to let Vera speak because she's a mom too. But I want to let folks know that we have been in this fight since day one, and I'm pretty confident in saying. And I'm by no means am I a leader in this union. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that our union fights for social injustice, and because we have such a large group of members that live in Sanford mm-hmm. and work in Sanford. And live in the Central Florida area. This is one of our fights.
Yeah.
Yes, this is totally one of our fights. And we actually will be having a call to discuss next steps today. To discuss next steps as a union, as a local, as a whole. And I just wanted to highlight too, this is nothing new in this state. In 1934, Claude Neal was murdered. The Rosewood incident in 1923, the Moores, it was a husband and wife couple that lived out in Mims. They were part of the NAACP, murdered in 57, in 1957. This is nothing new. This happens all the time. We have a case that's going on right now in Jacksonville.
Often it's not counted as murder. It's just like the Malcolm X grassroots movement.
This wasn't Trayvon's
murder. 28 hours.
Exactly. Trayvon's murder, Trayvon Martin case wasn't considered
murder.
Often
cops doing it, so it doesn't even get counted. That's another matter.
You know, but I'm not here to pass blame on nobody. What I'm here to say is that this is nothing new in this state, and until we as citizens in this state start to speak up and speak out about the civil injustices that go on, whether it be from, you know, not being able to protect our black and brown males to Medicaid expansion, we need to do something, and we need to do it right now.
And me speaking as a mother, I can't throw like a race card out there because of the color or anything like that. I'm going to say it this way. Me being a mother, our children, not just the black children, not just the brown children, the white children too, mm-hmm. are being targeted. When you go back to the Casey Anthony case, where was the justice for her? Mm. Her life was taken from her before she even got a chance to know who she really was. Mm. Trayvon followed in the same steps. His life was taken from him before he got a chance to even know who he was or become the man that he was supposed to be. And it's not fair as being a mother to have to lose a child. We should never have to bury our children. Mm. Our children are supposed to bury us. Mm-hmm. And it comes a time when we all have to take a stance and look at what's really going on. And we have to hold the people accountable, period. Regardless of who they are, what they are, or what stands they have in society. When you are wrong, when you take the life of an innocent child, I see a problem in that.
To be some consequences.
There should never be an incident where a child, an unarmed child, Kaylee or Trayvon, neither one of those two should have lost their life in any type of incident that came about to them.
There's also, you know, millions in jail for very little reason.
Exactly. You have
so,
those.
I mean, the big picture is really important. Some of the things that are frustrating about this whole discussion about it before the trial, everything for me was all this legalistic stuff. Everybody gets to become a lawyer. I'm like, I don't care about this Zimmerman dude. I mean, I wouldn't invite him to my house. Let's say that's a polite way of saying it, but it's bigger than that.
Right. Exactly. It's about innocent lives being taken.
Right.
For no regardless, reason.
They
regardless
get value.
Of who
no
exactly
value, yeah.
They're not valuing our children. They're targeting our children. They're not giving our children a chance to grow up and to be who they're going to be. And I don't think any human being has the right to take that away from them.
That's right.
I mean, I got to say that, you know, there's a lot of this apologetics on the white apologetics going on that really gets me very, very angry too, despite being a white Jew, I guess, right? Exactly. Afraid Jews are considered to be white, you know, always contested that a little bit. But anyway, it's like, yeah, you know, again, the numbers are there. You know, I'm an economist, right? You know, yeah. look at opportunity, look at income levels, you know, yeah, what post-racial society? You've got to be kidding me. And, right. And the prison industry and the way it's evolved over the years. It's differential treatment for the same infractions. You don't cut it, there's no equality whatsoever. The stories are horrible. I could rattle out statistics about it, which are scary often enough, right? Yeah. A white ex-con has way better employment opportunities than a black man who's never been in jail. And he's got to be a saint, probably, given the system, right? Yep. And things like that. 25% of prisoners on planet Earth are African-American. No, sorry, 1 out of 8. 25% of prisoners on planet Earth are Americans. Mm-hmm. More percentage of the population behind bars than anyone ever in history, including the Stalinist Russia and things like that. So it's really so abhorrent, you know? And I think I hope a lot of people are somewhat paying attention. I think sometimes a lot of my, you know, right-wing conspiracy nuts are on board with that, though they sometimes need a little bit of hand-holding on a couple of things. But so, yeah, so race card, you know, I mean, it's fact, you know, it's not, of course, it is true and recently been articulated very well, as usual, by Dr. Cornel West on this topic that, yeah, the machine that has chewed up African Americans over the years, over the centuries, so savagely is now chewing up everybody else too.
Yeah,
there's a degree of solidarity to be called here a little bit. It's like, you know, so, you know what I'm saying? Like the crazy conspiracy theorist types, you know, they're all like, FEMA camps and stuff. I mean, you know, you got a point there. Yes, you know, pretty soon the cops will also, you know, already are beginning to arrest white kids too in schools, like you were saying, for nothing, you know, putting them into the system, etc. So we should learn from that, certainly.
For sure.
I think, and then it's sadly that, of course, the race division is being played on us very effectively over the years. Yeah. We're really so important to get over it instead of getting all like, oh no.
I will say that the calls that we understand that there's some level of race in regards to this, but I think the conversation nationally and locally is that we don't want to deal in race. We want to deal in happened, and a child died, and it was unnecessary, and the value of our children it's just not there. We need to focus on how we keep that messaging lifted and in the media versus that negative race baiting messaging that could possibly, you know, continue to flourish because this happened. So I think some really smart people across the country are really putting their thinking caps on and trying to figure out where do we go from here. And I think hopefully 1199 will be right there in that decision making, and if not, we'll be there to lift up and support whatever folks choose to do, as long as it's for the betterment and for our members.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you know, because I was like, you know, I was saying like, yeah, the anger is very justified, but you're saying, which is great, but you want to channel it, organize it. Just people getting crazy in the streets because they're so frustrated, it's not going to...
It's not productive.
I understand. I sympathize. But you're saying it's not going to be effective.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. If anything, they'll take that and they'll use that against us.
And that's kind of what you guys are doing about it. Yep. So that's great. Yep. Right. I mean, we're almost... Any kind of last moments? The last moment. How did you get... I mean, Vera, so we know you came from the business. You're a caretaker, you know? In the care industry, so you joined the union and then decided to work for it.
Well, actually, what I have been in the facility that I'm in, I've been there 6 years. I joined the union when I first came in, and as of probably the last year and a half, I got active within the union because you know, it's, to me, I wanted to see I'm a part of something. I need to know what I'm a part of. Mm-hmm. So I got active in it. I started going to meetings. I started going to assemblies to see exactly what is our strategy. How do we plan on doing what is going on in the communities and how to make my community stronger? Mm-hmm. You know, I started going. I came back informing my community of what's going on around them. These are the fights that we have right now. Okay. We have issues with immigration. We have issues with felons, their rights not being reinstated mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. Different, so many different issues, so many different topics that people weren't even aware of in the community, that there was somebody out there fighting to get their rights back. Mm-hmm. There was somebody out there didn't know how to go about getting their rights back. There are people out there that didn't even know how to get registered to vote. There were people out there that thought they were registered to vote, and they weren't registered. You find out the day of, okay? Mm-hmm. So I got involved with it. I became a part of it, and I became a part of the solution mm-hmm. to help educate the community mm-hmm. on what's really going on. And not just the community, but your family members too. That's you know, right. You reach out to them. They might not even be here in Florida, but in a different state. But once you put the awareness out there of the different type things that you're dealing with here, it makes them question their communities in whatever state they're in. You know, and it makes them question to the point where, okay, well, I need to go to a town hall meeting. I need to go to a city meeting or see what's going on. Are we having community meetings? We need to start having community meetings to see what's going on in our community, the next community. Maybe something's going on over there we can help them with, or they can come in and help us with. But it's all about educating each other, making the necessary phone calls to the people that you need to make them to, mm-hmm. and understanding your area, your surroundings, and knowing what's going on.
And taking action. So you feel a lot of people are frustrated out
That's
there.
Right.
You know, they know it's rotten, but they don't know what to do about it.
But if you don't get involved, then how can you have a voice in it? You have a voice, use your voice.
Absolutely.
Step up, stand up, and stand strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
Hey, before we're and Koi, you're also care industry, but not the immediate.
So I'm gonna be brief. I am a migrant from the state of New Jersey who moved here actually from Georgia. I was an educator for 9+ years here in Georgia and here in Orange County. I taught language arts. I'm certified in language arts and reading here in the state, and I taught middle school students language arts and reading. For 3 years here locally with at-risk youth and charter school setting. Above teaching, missed the administration, wanted to do something more. I'd always been an activist in my communities that I've lived in. And it was just a natural next step for me. Being active here locally. And then two awesome leaders, Monica Russo, shout out to our executive vice president of the state.
Yay,
Monica. And shout out to Roxy Nelson, who is the political director and my leader,
nice.
Who had faith in me and, you know, found me and brought me into the fold. And, you know, have lifted me up and supported me ever since. So that's how I became 1199 to those beautiful women. I thank them.
All right, listen, we're out of time, but you know, go to our blog at punkonomics.org if you want to find more information about y'all and stay in touch and
for sure.
You know, come again.
Listen, we're going to be looking for you to come out to do help us out with our contract fight.
You have my email.
Awesome. Let's do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, I gotta draw a line, I can't take it no more. If you ain't down with revolution, what you waiting for? Making money for suckers and not communities poor. Ripping flags off of coffins, man, it's ain't our war. Colonized and terrorized by the world's biggest killers. The US government, the biggest weapon and drug dealers. Filling prisons with children, incarcerating the future. MySpace and Facebook got us stuck on computers. Stuck on stupid bumping music that's abusive to the shorties. And the nonsense that you spitting, they just listen and absorbing. I've been dormant, I've been woken. I'm a giant, I'm ready. I'm with the Apu in Oaxaca and we hold the machetes. I rock hard like Palestinian children holding slingshots. I'm with every single kid that's down for hip-hop. For the culture, the life, what it really stands for. This music is resistance, it's the voice of the poor. I'm on the side of the world cause the teachers and lunch ladies on the streets with brown mommies raising our brown babies. I'm with youth organizers cleaning up the Bronx River. I'm like Jaime Escalante when I stand and deliver. I'm with Evo Morales, man, he running Bolivia. Distribution of the land so we could all live bigger. I'm with Hugo and Fidel, Grandmaster and Melly Mel. I'm with the Panthers up in Queens, justice for Sean Bell. I'm with Camacho Negron, I'm with Ojeda Rios. Freedom for Oscar López, time to get in the bill. I'm with Abu Jamal, I'm with Azad Shakur. I'm with the compas in the mall, can he getting a penny more? Shots free.
Southside, South Bronx, Oaxaca.